I wanted to end our time here today and just kind of do a talk that's a little bit more challenges us in our thinking a little bit. One of the things I try to do anywhere I'm speaking, and we do this in Mastermind as well, but I try to give our audience something for their heart to inspire them. So hopefully that's happened in the two evening sessions. And I try to give you something for your hand to equip you, something practical. And there'll be a little bit of that in this session. And I also try to give you something for your head to challenge you, to challenge your thinking, right? Because I know we all learn in different ways. And so depending on your personality, depending on your background, depending on your denominational persuasion, you learn and you grow in different ways. And so some of you are like, man, just give me the heart stuff and inspire me. And I'm probably a little bit more wired that way myself. And then some of you are like, just let me think about something or just give me something practical. So today is going to be more of a put on your thinking caps for a little bit. And I want to talk specifically about seven shifts that are happening in youth culture. I was going to just keep plowing forward with the morning session we did yesterday. And the more I thought about it, I just thought, man, I felt like this group really already kind of had the heart of being a spiritual father and a spiritual mother. And so I didn't necessarily think that I needed to dive into that any longer. And so I just figured, let's just go a different direction for this closing session. We'll talk seven shifts in youth ministry. By the way, the session I did yesterday morning and the one I'm doing now, these are sessions that are actually a part of Mastermind. So if you're wondering like what is the teaching and what are some of the things that we talk about in our coaching, you're getting kind of a live version of it here. So let's talk about seven shifts. And one of the things I've seen with a lot of our youth ministries today and a lot of our youth leaders today is that we inherited an old model of youth ministry. And we've inherited a model of youth ministry that was really geared around the millennial generation. Right? And unfortunately, you and I aren't ministering to millennials anymore. We're ministering to Generation Z. So it's a different generation. But sometimes we haven't made the shift in our thinking, in how we're approaching everything about youth ministry, the way we're approaching relationships, the way we're approaching conversations with students, the way we're programming our youth ministry. By programming, I mean like you have a midweek service or you do some small groups or you have some curriculum that you use. You have a Sunday morning discipleship thing. There's a lot of different ways and a lot of different models for that. But oftentimes, I've seen youth ministries and youth pastors and churches that haven't really shifted from a millennial mindset towards the students they're ministering to a mindset that is more relevant for Generation Z. So I'm going to give you seven shifts that are taking place between millennials and Generation Z. There's probably more. These are just the seven that I'm going to talk about. And then with that, I'm going to give you kind of our practical tweak of what you can do or what in this session we'll call an approach change that you can make. And then I think what we'll do is we'll go through like one or two, and then we'll just take like a 2 or 3 minute break and have you turn and have a conversation with people around you to kind of brainstorm different approach changes that you could make in ministry or in your context that would really help you kind of take this principle and figure out how to apply it to what you're doing. So here we go. Seven shifts that are happening between Generation Y, Generation Z, Generation Y. That's the millennial generation, Generation Z. That's the current generation we're ministering to, which roughly speaking is about your 18, 19, 20-year-olds and below. That's Generation Z. So that's every student that you have in your ministry right now. So here's shift number one. Confidence is morphing into caution. Confidence is morphing into caution. Millennials were a very confident generation. Millennials were kind of like boomers, like baby. How many of you are baby boomers? You know, some of you are baby boomers in the room, right? So millennials were a little bit more like boomers as teenagers, pretty confident. We're going to rule the world. Let's go. Just, you know, let's do it right now. Generation Z, it kind of looks a little bit more like Gen Xers. How many of you are Gen Xers? I'm a Gen Xer myself, right? So Generation Z, which it's good for you, by the way. Like if you're a Gen Xer and you're missing a Generation Z, there's probably some natural connection there anyways. So Generation Z looks a little bit more like Gen X as teenagers. And all of us that are Gen Xers, we're raising kids now, we're parents, and our generation of parenting tends to be a little bit more overly cautious. Right? How many of you are like, oh, that's me. I'm a helicopter parent. I'm monitoring all channels of social media. I want to, you know, like my kid had a phone when they were 6 years old because I wanted to know where they're, you know. And so Gen Z parenting wise, this is the generation, not Gen Z, Gen X parents. We become a very overly cautious generation of parents. And so we've produced a generation of students that have become very cautious. Right? And so what's ended up happening is we have created in our parenting, we've created a generation, Generation Z, that has a high level of fear when it comes to failure. And you might see that in some of your students and some of the conversations that you have with them. They're afraid to fail. They're afraid to let down their parent. They're afraid that they're not going to make the team. They're afraid they're not going to get the grade. They're not going to get the scholarship. There's this high degree of failure or fear of failure in the students that you and I are ministering to, right? So here's an approach change, just a practical idea, and there's probably going to be more. Here's an approach change. You and I, as youth pastors now that are ministering to Generation Z, we have to help kids learn how to step out. We have to help them learn how to take a risk. We have to help them learn how to be brave, and that more than likely involves you creating opportunities for them to lead. So in a very practical sense, if you are not harnessing the power of student leadership in your youth ministry, you are missing out not only on like a built-in volunteer team of students that want to serve and they want to lead, but you're also not approaching ministry correct in the sense that you're not really providing an opportunity for kids that are in this generation to say, I'm going to step up, I'm going to take a risk, I'm going to try something, I'm going to be brave, even in the face of my failure. Okay. 2 minutes, turn and talk to the person beside you, preferably somebody that you don't know, and you're gonna keep talking to the same person over and over and over again, so you're going to get to kind of understand each other's context real quickly. But turn and have a two-minute conversation. How would you take this principle practically and apply it to your current ministry setting? Ready, set, go. All right, time. If you can resume that conversation if you need to in just a couple minutes. I need one brave person to stand up and declare what your idea was. Tell everybody what your thought was. One practical approach change you can make. Go, stand up and yell it out. Great. And they're going to fail. So you're going to have to be prepared to walk them through that failure and understand that failure is a process of learning and growing in life. And we've all been through it as adults and we'll go through it again, right? Okay, here's shift number two. Shift number two is this. Idealism is morphing into pragmatism. Idealism is morphing into pragmatism. Millennials were the generation that was like, we want to stay young forever. Like, just like, we don't ever want to grow up. And that's one of the reasons why you have millennials that are, I mentioned this yesterday morning, it's one of the reasons why you have millennials that are marrying later and later and later in life, because it's this idea of, I'm going to stay away from adulting as long as I can. And for millennials, they view the idea of being adult through the lens of life experiences. So a millennial doesn't necessarily feel like they're an adult until they've experienced things like, I got married, or we've had a kid, or we bought a house, right? Or I finally finished college. And so being an adult for them is always, in a millennial mindset, is tied to, I've gone through certain experiences and now I'm quote unquote an adult, right? And so so as a result, they've said, I'm going to stay young forever. So very idealistic in that, right? Generation Z is different. Generation Z wants to be mature. There's this natural desire in them for maturity. There's this natural desire figuring out how to succeed in life. And so they're very pragmatic about it. They think differently about things like college and experiences and adulthood and maturity. And so they become very pragmatic, almost to the point that they can become pessimistic. Right? And so you're dealing with a generation of young people that can be very pessimistic, very negative, very skeptical that this world really has anything to offer them whenever they graduate from high school and what's out there for them, right? So all of this idealism that we had, we're gonna change the world, it's gonna be awesome, or I'm gonna stay young and fun forever, has turning into a generation that's very pragmatic, right? So here's the approach change that you and I make, and this really approach comes to the way we lead small groups or the way that we preach and teach in our youth ministries, the conversations that we have with our students. It's teaching Generation Z to be optimistic for their future. It's giving them a great vision for their future and changing the world, right? And so one of the things that I often did as a youth pastor is try to help young people, and you probably maybe heard it even a little bit of just the way I naturally communicate. I tend to use words that are very big and kingdom-minded, because I'm trying to help even you as a leader or our students get out of the bubble of my little life like my little tiny world and trying to help them have a vision for my life can make a difference. One of the things I would constantly say to my students is it's not your life to live, it's your life to give. And that was my little preacher moment, but something memorable where they could kind of take that and say, okay, this is about me giving my life away. And that involves a bigness to it. That involves a life of vision. That involves saying, God, I'm going to submit my life to you. I'm going to give my life away to you so that you can use it to make the biggest kingdom impact, right? And so that's one of the things you and I have to teach, trying to reverse this very overly pragmatic, pessimistic side, right? So that's just a practical thing. Let's go on to number three, and then we'll take a break, and we'll talk about two and three together. Number three shift that's taking place, attaining an education is morphing into hacking one. Right? So this is a generation, right? We have readily available information online, and it has led Generation Z to believe, I don't really need any formal education. I don't really need any training. I can just go do it, and if I can't figure it out, I'll Google it. Right? If I can't figure it out, I'll YouTube it. It is so funny. I am not the most mechanically inclined, crafty, you know, homemaker kind of guy. You know what I mean? And I just struggle with all that stuff. My dad was really good working with cars. My dad's really good working with wood and all that stuff. And I was like, I just didn't care. You know, like my dad's like, come do some woodwork with me. And I'm like, that involves the word work. I'm a teenager. No thanks. Right. And so as a result, like, I don't really know how to do stuff. So it's funny. Like, I find myself doing the same thing that my son has always done. And that's like, is there a YouTube video on how to fix my car? You know, what can I hack this? Like, do I have to pay someone to do this? Wait, this is an entire generation, right? Entire generation of young people are like, I can hack an education, right? Because all the information is out there, right? So here's the approach change, because that's the mindset that they have. The approach change that you and I have to make as youth leaders is helping them sort out their goals in relation to their educational path. This is the goal. What do you want to do with your life? Okay, cool. What's the educational path that you should take? And teaching them the difference between the information that they find on Google, tons of information, right? And the difference between that and knowledge, which is great. You know a lot of stuff, but the most important biblical one being wisdom. Wisdom being knowledge that you learn how to apply to everyday life, the way that you live your life. So you and I are missing to a generation, unlimited information, really, tons of knowledge, real low on the wisdom side. And so we have to help them connect all of that and say, listen, the technology is great. The information is great. The knowledge that you're gaining watching on YouTube, that's great. But let's talk about wisdom. Let's talk about how to apply it to your everyday life. I'll give you one example, and then we'll give a little break here, and you can turn and talk. So I used to have students that would come, you know, youth pastor. You always end up having conversations with juniors and seniors in high schools about their college, you know, choices and where they're going, what they're going to do, and their career and whatnot. And so I would have kids come to me like you do, and they ask you to fill out a reference for college, right? They're trying to get a scholarship or something. And so that's great because it's an opportunity for you and I to talk. Like, hey, where are you going to school? What are you thinking? And so I have kids that would say, I'd say to them, what do you want to do? Like, what are you thinking? Like, what do you think you want to do when you graduate from college? And if they said something to me like, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, you know, then my advice typically was, then you should try to get into the best school you can possibly get into. Because a diploma and a degree from that kind of school is really going to set you up and open up great doors for you in that particular field. But then I'd have other students come to me and they'd say, I want to be a teacher, or I want to go into ministry. I want to do something like that. Yet they're looking at like the most expensive college in the world. And I would just say to them, listen, I'm just going to be real practical with you real quick. Like the field, the goal that you have is amazing. It's great because that's what God wants to use your life to do. However, if you go to that school, you're probably going to incur tens of thousands of dollars of debt, and the open doors that are going to come as a result of that school probably aren't going to be any better than maybe the down-the-street community college that you could get credits from for a whole lot cheaper. And so that's just helping students like understand, and we'll talk a little bit more. And one of these shifts is about how generations you've used money. And so this conversation really will set you up for one of the other shifts that's taking place. But that was just one of the ways that I always would try to coach students to say, hey, let's talk about the goal more so than like the name on the diploma that you're trying to get from a university, right? So let's talk about two and three, right? Remember, if you remember what two was, idealism morphing into pragmatism, right? And then number three, was attaining an education is morphing into hacking one. Talk practical nuts and bolts, little changes, approach changes that you can make in everyday student ministry that will help you apply these shifts that are taking place. Ready, set, go. All right. One idea. Some brave, bold introvert in the room who hates talking in front of people. Go ahead. All right, here we go. Let's listen right over here. Stand up. Come on. I know. I'm just getting you out of your shell. Go ahead. Yell it nice and loud. I love it. I think that's so important, especially when you look at the statistics that I mentioned yesterday about what's happening with the breakdown of the family and the epidemic of fatherlessness that's in our country. Your role, not just as spiritual mom and dad, but your role almost as guidance counselor in these situations can be so influential and so important. And so you open doors and you provide opportunities for students, right? All right, let's do two more and then we'll take another quick chat break there. So number four, spending money is morphing into saving money. This is a good thing. This is probably one of the best, you know, best practical traits when it comes to Generation Z, right? Millennials were like into today and me, right? And do whatever you got to do, right? Gen Z has learned a little bit about life from their short-sightedness and their thinking a lot more about their future. Actually, this one really ties into the one that we just talked about. But here's an approach change for that. So affirm it. Affirm the idea of saving money. Affirm the idea of planning ahead. Affirm the idea of not creating massive college debt. I just mentioned that, right? With that, you also need to affirm the idea of saving money for the purpose of being generous, right? Because you and I as youth pastors and youth leaders, if we don't see clearly our role in the context of not just our local church, but the broader kingdom, Jesus church as a whole, then we miss out. Like if we view youth ministry as an entity unto itself, and we got our little window of, you know, 6th grade through 12th grade or 7th through 12th or however your church breaks it down, right? If you don't see your role being, I am here and I'm filling in the gap in this specific age range, and my ultimate goal is to graduate these students so that they become fully devoted followers of Christ who serve in the local church, who attend in the local church, and who give in the local church, right? Then we've got a problem, because then that means that you and I, as youth pastors, we're not really seeing clearly what our role is and what our job is, you know, and in a sense, we're almost okay with the idea that we're going to have them when they are a student, and when they graduate from high school, they're going to graduate from their faith and go their own way. That's not our job. Our job is to continue that whole spiritual growth process and journey from the ages that we receive them until they graduate, with the goal being, hey, when you graduate, you're going to become a giving, generous, serving member, adherent of our local church. And if it's not your local church because they relocate, then that's okay. Then they're still doing that, but they're doing that for another church somewhere. And so they're a part of overall the kingdom of God, and the church is that way. So we have to see that. We have to understand that. And so one of the things that I've seen, even with my own kids, is that there are times, they're all three of my kids, they're all teenagers, they're all Generation Z. I mean, they save money like crazy, right? Almost to the fact where sometimes I'm like, you're hoarding it. Like, it's just like, oh my goodness. But with that desire to save, there are times where I've noticed a lack of desire to be generous. And so that's one of the approach changes. On one hand, yeah, teach on money. Listen, I in youth ministry, it's like a weird thought to think like the youth pastor is going to get up there and teach on money. This generation would love that. This generation, when my son was like 17 or 18 years old, we were already having conversations about retirement and setting aside money and what that looks like, because it's something that he's very interested in. I'll just say to you, man, your kids are far more interested in some of this stuff than what you realize, and you can not just teach some good financial budgeting type principles, but you can also instill in them the seeds of being generous with their money and the way that they give, whether they're giving to missions in your church or whether they're tithing and giving in offerings or whether you're raising money for missions projects, you know, within your denomination or the things that, you know, you guys are generous to as a church, right? So teach that and put that into practice as you're going through that, right? Number five, and then we're going to take a quick little small group break there. So number five, consuming media has morphed into creating media. Consuming media has morphed into creating media, all right? So millennial generation comes along, and they're like the first generation that kind of gets like the phone or the technology of the phone and all the social media platforms introduced to them. Like they grow up half of their life not having that. And then all of a sudden as a teenager, they get this thing handed to them and it's like, oh my gosh. And so as a result, the millennial generation became the generation that just massive consumption, right? Which really drove the technology of internet and bandwidth. And how many of you are like, oh, I remember modem. I remember like 14K, you know, like 14, whatever that noise, all those weird sound effects. I mean, it was like dopamine for my brain when I heard those noises. I'm like, oh, it's coming. America's coming online, you know, like, but the consumption of the millennial generation and Gen Xers, we know when we were young adults, right? The consumption drove the technology for like, we need more bandwidth. We need higher speed. We need all this because everyone needs to consume. Well, that's shifted now in Generation Z. And so this generation is not as interested in consuming massive amounts of media as much as they are in creating it, which is actually great. You know, I mean, to me, that's a great shift because now you have a generation that's like, I have here, you know, on the screen for you, they want to be pioneers, not just settlers, right? They want it. 72% of current high school students want to start a business. Whether it's a side business, whether it's a side gig, or whether it's you know, like the full time thing that they're going to do, but they're like, hey, I want to start a business. They want to be pioneers, and so this generation looks at social media, look at technology, they look at the power of the phone in their hand, and instead of just simply consuming it, they ask themselves, kind of instinctively, ask themselves the question, what could I do with this? How could I create with this? And when you tie this back in with the principle that we just talked about when it comes to money, they're thinking, how can I monetize this? Right? This is why we have YouTubers out there that make millions of dollars, right? This is why we have Twitch streamers out there that it's like, how much money do you make playing video games? You know, we're the generation that said, that's not a viable career option to our kids. And now Generation Z is like, oh yes, it is actually. Let me show you the stats on what I could do with this. And why? Because they have a mentality of, I'm going to create. I want to create. And since they're a little bit more jaded naturally, because remember we talked about the pessimistic thing up front? And since they're a little bit more pragmatic about things, right? Here, tie those together. They realize life is hard and this is going to take hard work. And so what you and I have is we have a generation, in my mind, let's put it in a spiritual context now. You and I have a generation now that is poised and ready to advance the agenda of the kingdom of God and be a pioneer in that field. We just have to teach them and disciple them and lean into the natural things that they're already thinking, right? When it comes to, I want to be a pioneer, I want to create. So what's one of the approach changes? Find ways to foster their gifts. Find ways to encourage them to monetize their gifts for a career or for side income. That's pretty practical, right? But put it in the kingdom of God. Find ways to encourage them to use their gifts to make a difference in this world, to use their gifts to make a difference in the church world, right? Open up doors for them. We did, one of the things that my wife and I were really passionate about in student ministry was missions. And during our about 15, 16 year tenure at the church we were at, I think I went on like close to 2 dozen different mission trips, and we probably took half of those were probably with students, and some of them were overseas, like global international trips. Some of them were stateside trips, you know, just kind of something here in the state or in another state, but it was a lot less expensive. And then some of them were just weekend experiences for like a junior high. We did like a we typically in our ministry we did 3 mission trips every summer. One was a weekend junior high mission trip. It was stateside. It was we found this youth center down in West Virginia that they would send junior high kids to, and they would just go and bless them and do work projects there. And then we did a stateside trip for senior high kids, and that was a little bit more money, a little bit more travel, and they would go to Las Vegas and partner with a mission organization out there. And then we typically did an international trip overseas, and we would partner with missionaries in like Dominican Republic or Jamaica, and those were some of the countries we went to. But even with those 3 trips, we did 2 Saturday serve days throughout the course of the year that had no cost associated with them. And so we looked at the whole thing kind of like a funnel where, like, hey, we want to get a kids to come out and serve once on a Saturday and kind of get the feel for how their life can make a difference. We're pioneering here. We're doing something different. And then from there, that's going to plant some seeds and maybe whet their appetite to do something more when it comes to missions, right? And so you can process that and how that works in your ministry. But for us, like, you and I have to tie into how do we create? How do we create? That's on a very spiritual side. On a practical side, let me give you one more thought, and then we're going to turn and let you talk in small groups. On a practical side, you have kids sitting in your church, regardless of the size of your youth ministry, and if they own one of these, they probably can do graphic design on this thing. They can make videos on this thing. They can manage your social media channels on this thing. They can do Facebook Live. You are ministering to a generation that has all of the power right at their fingertips. You and I just have to learn how to harness it and to teach them how to use it well. I mean, you know this. Like, there's more power in this technology than there was in, like, the Apollo 13 spacecraft. Right? And that's incredible. But we have to learn how to harness it. And when you and I as youth pastors learn how to harness that for the sake of our kids, you not only are we doing it for the sake of the kingdom, but you're also teaching the generation how to be responsible with the blessing and the gift that they've received growing up in the generation in which they're growing up. Does that make sense? Okay, turn and talk. How do you put these into practice? The money-saving thing we talked about in 4. Creating media in 5. Practical ideas. Ready, set, go. All right, here we go, here we go. One idea from one happy extrovert who loves to talk in front. No, it's okay, you raise your hand first. Go ahead, stand on up and give us a practical idea. Turn and face everybody so they can hear you real well. That's great. Love it. One of the things we used to do in our youth ministry, when it came to, we did a lot of retreats and we did missions trips, and there was always a price tag attached to those. But we also, with that, began to realize that every time there was a price tag attached to certain things or a significant price, that we automatically ruled out X amount of kids in our youth ministry because it just totally, there just wasn't ever going to be able to do it. And so we actually started doing some in-house retreats in our church where, it was almost like a sleepover type thing. And I hated the idea. I thought this is going to be absolutely terrible. No one is going to come to this. And then we were surprised because like tons of kids showed up, and it was actually became some of our biggest events, the biggest weekends. So for us, we would, kids would show up Friday after school. We'd do like a Friday night service, and then we'd go out, do like a Friday night late night activity somewhere. And then they'd sleep overnight at the church and, have chaperones and do all that kind of stuff. And then on Saturday, those were our serve days. And so we would partner with a local mission house, a mission project type organization in Reading, and then kids would go down and they'd serve. And then sometimes when the event started to grow and we had too many kids to kind of all go serve in one location at the same time, then we'd like send senior hires down in the morning to serve, and then we would do discipleship
type groups for the junior hires, and then we'd flip it after lunch or whatever. So, and I think that we would do that whole thing, and we would only charge kids like $20 to come. But if you could get some sponsors, you could do the whole thing for free, you know. So there's definitely ways you can create some of those moments without there always having to be a high price tag attached to it. All right, so let me give you two more here, number 6 and 7. We're talking about seven shifts happening between Generation Y, Generation Z, Millennials, Generation Z. So here's number 6. Viral messages are morphing into vanishing messages, right? So now you millennials were so enthralled with the idea of social media that they never gave any thought process to like a digital footprint. They didn't really give any thought process to the idea of like everything that you put online is actually always going to be connected and come back to you and or potentially haunt you in some way. Almost as if everything that millennials did turned into a digital tattoo of sorts that it's like, yeah, that's stuck with you now, right? And so Generation Z tends to be a little bit more private. And so that's why they're attracted to technology and apps like Snapchat and other technology that's out there that makes the messages vanish, so to speak, because they kind of instinctively think, I don't want to be tracked online. Like, I don't know exactly, I don't want you to be knowing exactly what I'm doing. And so this is an opportunity for you and I to really teach this generation how to properly use social media. How to make social media truly social, right? The name itself. I used to say to our students all the time, online relationships should always create better offline relationships, right? That's what should happen. If you're leveraging social media correctly, whatever platform you choose, your online relationship should simply make the offline relationship better. Example, I see you, we haven't talked in weeks or maybe months, but because you and I have an online relationship, I know that you just, you know, went on vacation. Or if you're a student, I know that you just, you know, your team just won the championship or whatever. And now it's one of the first things that I bring up when I meet you, like, oh, hey, I saw that. Okay, so that's an example of how our online relationship makes our offline relationship more meaningful, because I'm kind of tracking with not all of your life, but certain pieces of your life that you decide to, you know, put out there for everybody to see. So there is value in social media. And I've never been one of those guys that have just kind of like throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's all terrible. It's all bad. I mean, if you really felt that way, then don't even go to the grocery store, because you can't even stand in the aisle and look at the magazines there. You know what I mean? So you and I have to learn how to take technology and take what's happening in the world and leverage it for the sake of our generation and leverage it for, I know, how can they use it? So talk about social media. Talk about how to leverage it correctly. Talk about boundaries in social media. Talk about how social media, and this is one of the things I used to always teach parents in our church setting, is that, like, because, you know, parents will look at social media and be like, oh, my God, the world is terrible. It's just everything's falling upon me. And look at all this and look at what people are saying and look at the political arguments and look at the pictures that the girls are posting of themselves now and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I used to always say to them, listen, it's always been that way. We just actually get to see it now. I mean, all social media is ultimately doing for you and I is revealing the state of the heart that has always been in mankind. That's all it's really doing. Now, is that comfortable? No. Is it pleasant? Absolutely not. Do we like it when we see the teenage girl in our youth ministry posting pictures that we're like, oh, wow, okay? No, we don't like that at all. But all that's doing for you and I as leaders, it's revealing the state of their heart on one hand, and it's also revealing the level of maturity on the other hand. And so lean into it as a leader is all I'm saying. Lean into it and use it as an opportunity to leverage proper use of social media. Or this is kind of what Fabian was talking about the other day when it comes to truth and grace and the tension between those two things. If it's a non-church kid, then you approach that with more grace, knowing that they don't really know what the truth is. So if it's a non-church girl who's just getting ready to come to your youth ministry and she's posting all kinds of what you consider to be inappropriate, immodest pictures online, she doesn't know the truth that there is or should be a standard for her life. And so you approach that with grace. If it's a church kid who knows better and you know that they know the truth, right? So then you approach that a little bit harder with truth. But remind yourself as you're having these conversations or you're teaching your kids about social media that social media is actually doing you and I a favor as leaders, because it's revealing the state of the heart of the students that you're ministering to. And too many times what we want to do as leaders is we want to address the topic without really dealing with the issue. The topic is what you just saw posted on social media. The issue is the heart issue that allowed them to be willing to do it in the first place. Does that make sense? right? And so there's an opportunity here. Last shift, and then we'll break and talk a little bit more. It kind of deals with social media and technology anyways. Number seven, text messaging is morphing into iconic messaging. Emoji thumbs up, praise hands, and a lot of other ones that we can't talk about in church, right? So Generation Z knows the value of storytelling through pictures. They're artistic in that way, right? They enjoy that. Now here's the advantage for you, or the approach change for you. Use more stories, especially in your preaching and teaching. Use more stories. Be more story-based. Be more story-based in how you approach talking about Scripture. Be more story-based in the testimonies of lives that have been changed in your church or in your youth ministry. Use more students to share their story, whether it's in a live setting or whether you put your video camera on and you record them doing it. But use more stories. Use more images. You know, find images. Find lots of images and videos of cats and use them. Over and over, Todd has all of them for you. Just go back there, and he just has all of them for you, right? It's great, right? More metaphors, more word pictures to communicate the gospel, more stories and more stories of life change when it comes to marketing your ministry, if you're doing that, right? If you're out there on social media as a ministry and kind of developing a platform and developing a brand that you're trying to get kids to connect to so you can use it as a communication tool, use more stories. The Bible has incredible stories. So tell those stories and then pull the scriptural practical truths out of those stories that can apply to the life of a student, right? So again, I see this as a huge advantage where you and I can learn to be storytellers. Jesus was the best storyteller we've ever had. Read the Gospels, parables, story after story after story after story, some of which you and I are still trying to figure out. Right? And so learn to be a great storyteller. There's actually a lot of resources out there. I'm actually reading a couple books right now that are on public speaking, specifically in the focus of like being a great storyteller as a public speaker. So that's an opportunity for you to go train yourself, right? So take 2 minutes and let's talk about social media. Let's talk about this idea of iconic messaging and stories and some practical ideas of how you can do this in your youth ministry. Ready, set, go. All right, let's do it. Someone give me one great idea. Oh, right here in the front, wearing a 23 shirt. This is not product placement on my part. Just one full disclosure. I did not set this up, although that is a really awesome T-shirt. All right, here you go. Take it away. Love it. Love it. That actually hits like so many of these, responses to so many of these shifts that we were talking about real quick. Okay, so let me just wrap this up with just kind of a couple ideas for reaching students. Number one, make sure you're relationally engaged. I mean, I've talked a lot about that between, especially in yesterday's session, so we don't really need to unpack that any bit more. But I think your relational engagement with students is more important than you being relevant, I believe in the idea of being relevant and cultural relevance and things like that. I do believe that, but relationships are the foundations, and relationships ultimately are the trump card. Secondly, be authentic. That's one of the things that I unpack in the second half of the session that we started with yesterday, is just this idea of like the more real and the more genuine and transparent and authentic you are as an adult and leaders and a leader, the more it endears students to you, but the more it also allows your life to model for students what adulthood looks like, what the spiritual journey looks like. And so I think gone are the days where adults don't really talk to students about what they've gone through, but now we're in a generation now with this. They want to know. They want to hear it. They want to hear it all. They want to hear that it's not always going to be easy, that it's not always going to be comfortable, that you're going to go through some stuff. I've talked a little bit, in this setting as well as privately with some of you about the transition that our family has gone through in the last 2 or 3 years. And, my wife and I decided we were going to be very open and upfront and honest when the time was appropriate with all three of our kids, because we knew that God was going to use this season not only in our lives, but he was going to use it in their lives as well, right? And so be real and genuine, authentic, care for the hurting. I tell you, probably one of the most relevant things that you can do in ministry is just care, especially when kids are hurting. So just kind of a last reminder there. And then lastly, create a family culture. And again, that's kind of where we started yesterday morning with the practical sessions. Create a family culture. By doing that, or let me say it like this, you using any specific references to family, remember that for some of the kids in your youth ministry, family is not a good word. And so you are always going to have to redefine it for them and model for them what good, biblical, healthy family actually looks like. I think it's one of the most important things that you can actually do, though, is intentionally use that word and call yourself a spiritual family and then intentionally redefine it over and over and over again, because we're living in a nation where the breakdown of the family unit is really what's causing almost everything in our country that we're dealing with right now. You can somehow, some way, take it back to a foundational point of the family unit has broken down and we have an epidemic of fatherlessness in our country. Right? And if you go and look at the statistics, and I don't have them memorized, but I have them in front of me. But if you look at the statistics of what happens to a family when the man of the family, when the husband of the family takes leadership and leads their family in a spiritual way, it's unbelievable the difference that it makes. If you heal the man, you heal the family. If you heal the family, you'll heal the nation. And so I think that it's one of, again, I'm coming back to some of the spiritual parenting stuff I talked about yesterday, but kind of dropping it right here at the last minute because I really want it to sit in your heart as you're driving home. That I think that if you don't create a family culture in your youth ministry, you're missing out on one of the most relevant tools and spiritual strategies that you and I have in order to reach young people in this generation, as well as in order to raise them up as healthy adults, healthy husbands and wives who are going to create healthy families, right? So I hope that encourages you. I hope that instructs you. I want to say two things as Randy's making his way up. I would encourage you before you leave, if you have not done so already, go over there to Wayne Morgan's booth, National Network of Youth Ministry. Sign up for their newsletter because they have a great way of helping you get connected. I'll be there at my table. Mel Walker in the back has written some incredible books, and I just encourage you to go support his ministry and buy some of his books. Todd from Download Youth Ministry. I lived on Download Youth Ministry games in my youth ministry. We actually use them at our conference as well, and so they got incredible stuff. And then Spruce Lake all year around has incredible programs, incredible camps, day camps, week-long camps, weekend retreats in their wind. They have some incredible things, as well as if you are in a youth ministry setting where you do your own retreat and you're just looking for a space or facility to rent out for you to do your own retreat, they do that as well. So there's a lot of options with Spruce Lake. If you, my youth ministry, we didn't really partner with places like Spruce Lake for their camp program, but we partnered with them to rent it out and do our own thing. So you got both options here, and what they provide here year-round is incredible. Once again, Randy, thank you so much for the investment that you guys are making in youth leaders. God bless you guys. Love you. We'll connect with you over at the table.